podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is the Anfield Wrap indeed, after Liverpool have gone to Nottingham Forest and won by 1-0. Surrounded I am by Andy Heaton, producing Phil Blundell, Paul Senior and Ian Ryan. Some public service announcements before we get any further. Next weekend, on Friday night, we are in Belfast. On Saturday night, we are in Dublin, and on Sunday night, we are in Cork. If you are near any of those locations, come and see us for a great live show. It will be the absolute business. Brighton was brilliant. We had a fantastic time doing it, and we will be taking it up a couple of notches in Belfast, in Dublin and in Cork. Also on a similar theme, without sort of giving too much away at this stage, if you think you may well be in the London area on, let's just say, July the 9th, it is a Saturday, you may want to keep that date free. So this is a save the date. It's like those things that people do for weddings, but this is well better than a wedding, because it is an actual clear act of love that we can all share in together towards Liverpool Football Club. Also, I want you to download the app if you haven't done so already. Loads of fantastic stuff on there, on the Anfield Wrap app, especially for this season that is going into April with everything on the line. And I think the idea of it going into April with everything on the line, Paul Senior, is one of the reasons why it actually becomes a tense affair. I think for the first time in a long while, I actually thought Liverpool got to a point in a game where they looked just a little nervy. And I was quite surprised by it. By about 65-70, I thought the sort of the magnitude of where Liverpool were, the fact that they hadn't taken either the chances or the chances to create chances earlier in the game, for the first time in a while, I thought, oh, the Reds look a bit edgy.
I must say, I didn't really feel that way in the ground. When they missed that chance, I'm not sure what minute that came in.
Just 2 minutes before we went and scored at the other end.
Yeah, was it? So at that period, I was like, oh, you know, you realise your own fragility at that sort of nil-nil position, don't you? You know, and that is the joy of a knockout competition. And but in the grounds, I sort of felt more in control than maybe what you've just suggested there, Neil. You know, I thought, you come out when, because it's a championship side, you're never going to come out of that game with tons of credit if you beat them even 1-0. And I don't think Liverpool this morning will be getting all the headlines, but the objective going into it, and I looked at this as a really tough tie as soon as it was drawn, because Nottingham Forest, championship side, yes, but Nottingham Forest, good championship side. Well, I'd probably rather have faced anyone from the bottom 10 of the Premier League at this moment in time.
I know exactly what you mean.
They felt like a team in the ascendancy, full of confidence, very well organised, with what evidently looks like a really good manager. And it's not that I didn't fancy it, I always fancied us, but I knew it was more of a banana skin than maybe that what people were giving us credit for.
It's one where I think the key thing, the reason why I got edgy, Phil, was I thought Forrest got to grow in belief in that they don't get punished. So they get away with one or two. And I watched it on telly, you were in the ground. Dixon said on commentary, you know, Forrest are in this. But the thing I was thinking was, but they haven't created anything. So they're in there, they're killing themselves to be in this, but they're not creating anything. And then they just started to create a thing or two. And that was the moment where I went a little bit from, it'll come to, it doesn't take much for this to become really sticky for Liverpool. And thankfully it didn't.
No, you see a lot of games like this, really, don't you, in this kind of situation. And we've been doing a lot of it recently, actually, where we've sort of been controlling teams who get this position that they're doing well and not actually doing well.
Yeah.
But what we did yesterday is we let Forrest get to the point where they actually did start to do well, because that chance he missed is a sitter. There's the header as well. I think the header was at 1-0, wasn't it?
The header was at 1-0,
and he should do a lot. But it's a difficult header, but it's behind him, and you know, he's put it straight to the goalkeeper. But if you said to him again, do you think you should have done better, I'd guarantee you he'd have gone, yeah, that's about as badly as I could have executed that. So we've got there in the end, but it wasn't difficult. And I think you make up, there's a lot of changes, like the triangle on the right, for example, and I'm sure we'll come on to Oxlade-Chamberlain later. Oxlade-Chamberlain hasn't got Trent behind him or to his side and Salah in front of him. He's got Joe Gomez, who is a centre-back who did well, but he's still a centre-back. And he's got Harvey Elliott, who was an anonymous teenager in front of him, and that's not, like, I like Harvey Elliott, I think he's great, but the drop-off from Salah to him yesterday was astronomical. It wasn't a little drop-off, it was huge. So when one of you decides of your team where a lot of your creativity comes down, you're going to have to, when that level has dropped off, sorry, you're going to have to do something and basically brave things, and we did in the end, and it was that, we've got there, it was hard. I'm glad that's over, because it was graft, and you can't win these games, really, can you?
No,
because you're supposed to win. You're supposed to beat Nottingham Forest because they're a championship team.
The key moments in the game, I've mentioned their miss, Phil's mentioned their miss, obviously there's our goal we'll come on to, but another key moment is first half when we get in on a couple of occasions, I think really quite well, but one major one when Firmino's got the chance to make it 1-0. I think if that goes 1-0 to Liverpool at that point, Ian, it probably does become a more straightforward afternoon, and an afternoon not dissimilar to the one that Chelsea had the day before away at Middlesbrough. You just have to score in that scenario, and it's frustrating that he doesn't, because as I say, I think it would have just all been much more straightforward if he had.
Yeah, it was all too casual, wasn't it? I think Fowler spoke after the game about, you know, the goalie wants to make the goal as small as possible, but the forward's job is to make the goal as big as possible, and he doesn't really open himself up for Firmino at all, and it's just the most casual of finishes, and it was hugely frustrating because he has to slot that, and I totally agree. The game then becomes something very different. Forrest start chasing it, Liverpool will find gaps and exploit those gaps. I also think as well, the tackle on Jota, which looked like a good tackle in real time, for me it's a pen. It's a pen. I don't think he gets anything on the ball, Worrell. I think he slides in and you think he's nicked that. And then when you see it in kind of slow motion, I think Jota kind of controls it really well, shields it really well, and he kind of just clips him. So I think that was potentially a penalty. And again, you know, if Liverpool are going in one or two up, it is a very different game, as we've said. I think Paul's right to frame it as Forest are in the ascendancy. There's a back catalogue there of the Arsenal game, the Leicester game, where they've played really, really well. So Liverpool knew what they were walking into. That said, I thought the atmosphere, certainly coming through the TV, felt like a proper atmosphere, felt like a proper cup atmosphere, where it can get on top of you a little bit if you're having a poor game. And I think one or two don't maybe cover themselves in glory. You know, Phil's touched on Harvey Elliott there. I think, you know, you can caveat a lot of that with he's on the back of an injury. I don't think it works for Chamberlain, I have to say. And again, there's caveats about, you know, you're playing with slightly different players than what maybe you'd normally would do. But it's not great. It's bouncing off him a little bit. I also think, and you've mentioned about Firmino maybe being the best attacker, but again, I thought he's quite sloppy at times. It's bouncing off him a little bit. It's a little bit casual. Jota the same, gets the goal. But his link-up play wasn't particularly great. Now, he's got this ability where he can have a poor game and still get a winning goal, which is why we love him so much. So I think it was a little bit sloppy at times. And I think Liverpool, albeit are getting into good positions, you'd say the final ball, certainly in the first half, was letting them down time and again.
Did you feel as though it was one game too many? I think it's been a funny little run, this. And actually, you know, when you now look at this run of games as it is, it's pincered either side, I think, in quite an interesting way, where there's the ultimately Liverpool end up in a situation where the games that mattered to them were Brighton and Arsenal. The game against Inter Milan was, well, we're already two up from the first leg, and there was this one that almost felt a bit like, well, this is the end of this particular run.
100%. I think Jota frames it like that in his post-match interview, where he says, you know, we knew this was going to be tough because it is the last game of one of these runs. And, you know, Liverpool have had to make a few changes as well. You know, there's an awful lot of creativity's come out of that team, especially the full-backs. And I think, you know, Phil's talked about Joe Gomez there, and I think he does really well, to be honest. I'm not a huge fan of Gomez at right back, and I don't think he is. Maybe some of that is because of the injury he suffers at Burnley that one time, but I don't think it always looks necessarily comfortable for him, understandably so. That said, he's not afraid to put himself in the positions where he can get a ball in. No one can replicate what Trent does, but I think he does a really, really good job. Neil, it was always going to be tough, and, you know, when you talk about Nottingham Forest, this is a team who are on the cusp of the playoffs. They've been on an unbelievable run. Cooper's done a magnificent job. They're bottom of the league under Chrissy Hughton. He comes in after six or seven games, and they've been flying ever since. They're on a really good run last 10. As we said, the crowd can get on top of you a little bit. So it was never going to be easy. I think Liverpool do deserve quite a lot of credit for yesterday.
I think on Forest as well, it's funny sometimes when you get these sides, and as I said before, in the ascendancy, they feel... When I was in the ground yesterday, I thought to myself, these are ready for the Premier League. The whole club felt like it was being geared up for the Premier League in terms of... I don't know. If you go to match enough, you just get the vibe.
No, but watching it, I felt like it didn't... It reminded me of Brentford away.
It reminded me a lot
of Brentford, I felt, where, you know, this season it looks like, and touch all necessary wood, Brentford are going to stay up, you know, from this position. That's what it looks like at the moment. Without sort of having anyone who you call a superstar until they brought in Eriksen, with all due respect to Ivan Toney, you know, it looks to me as though, looking at Forest there, the atmosphere, the idea that they could have certain big games, certain big evening games, that's what they look like to me. They look to me like really well organised, got a really clear plan, and it just reminds me massively at Brentford.
29,000 in the ground, fans feeling like they're ready to go up, that they're on a... And do you know what? They mightn't be on the journey this season, but they're on the journey to the Premier League, and it might not happen you know, in May, but it feels like it's inevitable that it's going to happen.
I think it will happen in May.
I think it might happen in May as well, looking at them yesterday. But under this manager, I think they've got the belief that they're going to go up. I think the danger is if they don't go up this summer for them, that they might lose the manager to someone else. You know, it could be our neighbours across the park, maybe, if they've got any long-term vision. But they haven't,
so it's fine.
They did feel formidable. And, you know, I was surprised when I heard it was 1999, but the last time we played them, it was on a little quiz before the game. Phil Blundell obviously got the answer right. He was 45 at the time. It was. And I think what I came out of that game thinking was, That's a better result than we're ever going to get credit for.
Big miss, followed by a Liverpool goal. Mm. Been a few of them recently. Also, another part of this, and the same person has popped up with it as well, Diogo Jota doesn't feel particularly involved in the game, scores a hugely significant goal. It's quite a theme, it's quite a trick to be able to pull off, I'd say.
Yeah, I think not involved in the game is a bit of an understatement because me and Paul were stood next to each other, and when we saw four subs on the sideline, I think the first person I had as going off was probably Jota. I thought he was quite poor. It wasn't that leaving a lack of involvement. I thought he was genuinely poor on the ball, decision-making. Just everything he did was wrong, pretty much, I thought. And it's not the first time this has happened recently. And I think there was a game the other week, and I can't remember which one it was. It might have been Inter. I think it was Inter, where I think I did the post-match show and was saying, usually as these games aren't infrequent for Jota, but he gets the goal, and he does that yesterday, so, if he does this another 10 times the rest of the season,
yeah,
I'd be absolutely delighted. I mean, I'd rather not have to watch the other 89 and a half minutes, but if he gets that goal and we win 1-0, I'm absolutely fine with it.
That's the danger with him, I feel, at the moment, is when me and Phil on the ground were talking about that, I caveated it. It was like, I felt exactly the same about him on Wednesday night at Arsenal. And I was hooking him, and the manager was hooking him. You know, it was like seconds later he was hooked, wasn't it? But that's the danger in taking him out of the game, really, is, you're chasing the lead. Who's most likely? And out of the options we had yesterday, it always felt like him.
Especially in a game like that as well, where we weren't creating loads with regular... I mean, I don't remember their goalkeeper making any real saves by the one-on-one.
The goal
was
a chance, but it's not... It's not cut and dry, no. You know. He's done really well, considering as well as Tsimikas, obviously.
I think the temperament's phenomenal, Ian. That's my main sort of take from it with him. His temperament is absolutely phenomenal. He stays in the moment. He sees his opportunity. It's a tremendous finish.
It's a great finish. It does feel like he's got no ice through the veins, and I think you can see why people do make the Fowler comparison. I think, in between the goalposts, he just comes alive, and I think you've almost got to accept sometimes that he is going to have those frustrating games, but my God, he brings goals, and he brings goals in important moments as well. You know, the Arsenal one, as Paul's mentioned, but then yesterday, you could argue that Liverpool never really looked like they were going to make the breakthrough. But whilst you've got someone like Jota, who's got impeccable movements, I mean, his movement's sensational. It is very Fowler-esque, the way he kind of takes the defender one way and then goes in behind. It was a brilliant goal, and that's 19 for the season now, and that's outstanding, to be honest. I mean, 19 goals. I mean, I don't think anyone, when he signs, is thinking he's going to get kind of near the levels that he's got to so quickly. You know, people often talk about his ability in the air because it is a thing. He's great in the air. And yes, there are times where he will frustrate, and I think there's been a number of performances where you think his link-up play could be a little bit better. They'll be working on that. You'd expect that's going to get better. It's not there yet, but Liverpool will never sign on the finished article with Diogo Jota. But what we have seen is this ability to just pull something out the bag. And when you're going into the final nine league games, when you're going on all fronts, that's one hell of a commodity to have. To have someone who can just do something in the split second. And as I say, he's a defender's nightmare because that movement is just phenomenal. It is elite level, the movements. And whilst you can say, well, he could be better at this, he could be better at that, there's lots and lots of things to kind of talk about and praise him for.
I was just going to say, there's like, when we signed him, there's some Wolves fans going, oh, we've had them off here, ridiculous amounts of money. You can sort of sometimes see what they mean in his performances. And then he does what he does yesterday, and it's like, no, that'll do. Thank you very much.
That's all the thing that we wanted, everything that we got. The selection of and deployment of Elliott and Oxlade-Chamberlain, Paul, I thought was really interesting. It looked to me like there was tons of fluidity. Sometimes one of them was playing wide right, sometimes the other one. It looked like Elliott ends up there a little bit more, and then second half he changes the shape, so it's more of a 4-4-2, and then Elliott is on the right and Chamberlain is then on the left for a period of time. I don't think either of them were helped by the fluidity. I think that you might have got more out of Elliott if he'd just been playing in midfield, as he has been pretty consistently, and more out of Chamberlain if he'd just got to do what he did in January when Mo Salah was absent. Maybe I'm wrong, and listen, it's rare there's anything the manager does at the moment where I feel as though I'm not quite convinced there, but yesterday I felt as though both players could have done with either greater clarity or maybe with it just being a little bit different.
Yeah, I think you might be doing them a favour there, Neil, a little bit. I think just both of the performance levels, maybe just a bit off. I understand. The thing is that the young lad's always going to come away with some sympathy, isn't he? And maybe rightly so. He's recovering from an injury and whatnot. I don't think any of them really impacted the game, and I haven't had the opportunity to watch the match back. Yeah, but I believe Oxlade-Chamberlain had a bit of a cob on coming off. And this is the occasion he's probably still at the club for, and the opportunity. We don't go this far in the FA Cup very often, do we? So I think when you come in, you've got to take your opportunities, really. And I think Elliott's a little bit in that boat at the moment, because we have got the five forwards, everyone in the midfield's pretty much fit, and I spoke on the Anfield Rap a couple of weeks ago about Joe Gomez frustrating me, because when he's given opportunities, he's sloppy in possession and whatnot. Yesterday, I felt like Gomez showed that, oh yeah, do you know what, it doesn't have to be Milner against City, it can be Joe Gomez or whatever. you sort of look into them fixtures and go, who can I count on for the next, if you're 16 games from greatness or something, you're going in all four comps. Can I rely on Oxlade-Chamberlain? Can I rely on Elliott? I wonder whether a little seed of doubt may have been sown in the manager's mind on both of them yesterday.
What I think is interesting, Ian, on it is there's two things that are at play for these players, and they're two quite different things, but it's happening to the players simultaneously. Chamberlain, any Chamberlain conversation, for a variety of reasons, one is literally when his contract expires, doesn't just become a conversation about his use between now and the end of this campaign, but actually becomes whether or not he's going to move on, and as he lost his Liverpool opportunity. That's not the case for Elliott. We all know the talent of Elliott, and there's a bit of a thing you can do, I think, with Elliott's performances this season, with a couple of exceptions, is imagine they were all happening in reverse order. Mm. Imagine he was playing the way in which he started the season, if you see what I mean. We'd all be saying, well, he's grown through this season, he's done this, that and the other. But there is still a point here where there are still the games to be played. There are still big moments. Someone has to play in those positions in those big moments. And Liverpool, you know, they could do with maybe getting a little bit more from one of these two. It almost doesn't matter which, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, the Elliott one, I mean, you have got to constantly remind yourself of his age. I mean, I think...
And the injury...
And the injury, obviously, but I think even Liverpool themselves have probably been a little bit guilty of bigging the player up a little bit, to the point where they're saying things like, we've got to hold him back here, you want to see him in training, you know he's unreal, we've had to hold him back, even though he's on the back of this injury. So I think when you start to hear narrative like that, naturally you jump on it a little bit and think, fucking hell, why? I can't wait to see him back, because he sounds like he's absolutely flying. And, you know, he's had the injury. I mean, he gets thrust into that Inter Milan game, which at the time I was quite on board with, to be honest, because of all the kind of talk. And then you quickly realise that it's probably going to take him a little bit of time. It's a bad injury, that. It's a really, really bad one. And I think there's testament to him that he's come back so quickly, so we might just have to be a little bit patient. And I still think there's a thing around, he's got to find his best position. You know, there was talk about, you know, will he be on that right-hand side as back up to Salah? Actually, no. In pre-season, you start to see him a little bit more withdrawn, maybe pulling the strings a little bit. So he's still got to find his best position. I think with the Chamberlain thing, he's a fella who looks, and Paul makes the comparison to Gomez, and I think it's a decent one to make, because at times they both look like lads who need a run of five or six games. Liverpool aren't in the business at the minute of giving lads five or six games just to get them back to a level, because there's plenty of other players who can do a job and were in the habit of winning football matches and trophies at the minute. So Chamberlain is going to have to cop for it, but when he's given his opportunity, unfortunately, as harsh as it is, he's got to fucking take it. Mm. He's got to take it. That's as simple as it is. Doesn't look great when he comes off.
When's he going to get them five or six games?
He's not going to get them.
This is the worry. So, like, can you wait till pre-season? Because he's been fit a while, Chamberlain. Yeah. Don't get me wrong, I don't know whether he'll ever be...
Last year as well, by the way.
This is it. I don't know if he'll ever be the same player again or whatnot. And then pre-season isn't the same thing. And if you've got all the players we've got, and Klopp spoke about trimming the squad in the summer, like, it's not fair on the lads he's got to keep them around, or so many of them around. I get that, but like, that's Nottingham Forest. That you should be able to shine there if you're Oxlade Chamberlain. And I think maybe he's looked at them and he's like, well, I wanted more time to shine. Well, you had your 60 minutes.
It always felt like it was going to come down to him or Keita. You know, kind of, you're thinking, well, they've both got injury records. But I don't think there's an argument now to be made. I think, you know, Naby looks far and away a better option for Liverpool longer term. I think, you know, the other thing, you see him come off and he's shaking his head a little bit, but also I noticed, you know, when the goal goes in, you know, Elliot's clapping, Elliot's kind of, Chamberlain's not, he's just kind of slumped back on his chair. And listen, you can understand it to an extent, but I don't think things like that particularly land well either, because I think Klopp's got this mentality where he wants everyone to be involved and everyone backing the lads. So, yeah, maybe it's coming to a finish for Chamberlain, but you can't say you're surprised.
I think a lot of the stuff, like the reaction you're talking about there, is in his head. It's like, I really want to succeed at this, because he ultimately, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain knows he's not going up. He knows he's not going up from here.
No,
you know, whilst he wants to play football every week, he doesn't really want to play football for West Ham or Aston Villa or Newcastle or whoever. He wants to be in this Liverpool team, because look at where we are.
Exactly.
And so we should. This is as good as it's going to get for anyone, never mind him. Even the likes of Salah and Mane and Alisson and Fabinho, it's as good as it gets for them. So when you're Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, you're on the cusp of it, and you know that if you want to play regular football, you're either going to have to get to this point or you're going to have to go somewhere else. And if he goes somewhere else, he knows he's probably not going to win anything the rest of his career. So that looks like it's preying on his mind, and it's almost a bit like he's not trying too hard isn't the right way of phrasing it, but it's like he knows he has to make this work, and I think that's sort of on his mind as well.
I thought he had hard lines yesterday in a couple of instances. There's the little lofted ball when he gets around the box, which Jota should read, or I say should read. It's the sort of thing that if Jota does read, we're saying it's an inspirationally good ball. And there's a couple of other instances. He has a couple of very, very good shots from distance that look as though they're really travelling charged down. You know, I think the other reason why I think he has had hard lines in general, and I think it's acceptable that he has, in that sometimes, you know, the football manager's job at this point isn't to get the best out of Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, it's to have Liverpool win as many trophies as possible, Phil. But even, you know, going back to January, he scores 2-2. He can't do that much more. So I think in the back of his mind, he is thinking, well, I just need a bit, and it could do with something bouncing for me here. I could do with sometimes, if I do play the clever ball, someone else reads it and gets on the end of it. I thought Chamberlain was all right, to be honest. It was just that he was only all right, see what I mean.
I was actually going to follow that up with saying I actually thought he was fine first half. You go on Twitter or WhatsApp conversations at half time and there's people saying thought he was bad. I thought he was fine. I don't think he was amazing by any stretch of the imagination. I thought he was fine. His problem is that fine isn't going to get him in the team in a Champions League quarter final. It's not going to get him in the team for an FA Cup semi final.
That's where I think some of his frustration would come on, because if I can ask you, do you think he gets another start between now and the end of the season?
I think he might get one more. I think it wouldn't surprise me. I think that the team Watford might be a bit.
I think there's also a Benfica second leg thing here if we roll them in the first leg. When you look at where that fixture is.
Yeah, there's a Benfica second leg thing. I also think there's a chance that there's one slightly strange selection that's going to get sort of dropped in
at
some point.
Do you know when that is, by the way?
It's Everton.
Correct.
So, you know, there's the... trust me, I'm...
Of course,
Jürgen Klopp loves mad teams against Everton.
So there's a mad selection there against the Blues that I think could get lashed in. It wouldn't surprise me if there is a Champions League. I'm ending up talking here, and I can see him getting possibly four more starts between now and the end of the season. But the problem with that is, I don't think he gets a single 90 in amongst that. And it also wouldn't surprise me if he's almost used in this way of, you're going to be part of tiring some lads out here for an hour, and then we're going to bring e.g. Luis Diaz on, and he's the one who's going to get the glory and get the moments. And that, I think, for a footballer who's trying to prove himself, is a bit harsh. But then the flip side is, we've all got a role to play at this point, you know, it might well be that the conversation, maybe the manager needs to have with the most, he's not going away on international duty, I point that out as well, so he's got a few days here where if they're doing some way, he can do some. But maybe the conversation needs to be with him is, you've just got a role to play here. So try to make your peace with the fact that you've got a role to play here. It's not the one that you want.
See, we're getting the bib and playing right back in training.
He could do worse things than volunteer. He could do worse things than volunteer and stick his hand up and say, I'll have a go at that if you don't mind, Gaffer.
I think the international break is quite interesting, knowing that I think he quite possibly is Watford.
Yeah.
Especially with the, you know, we play Benfica on the Tuesday. There's basically Fabinho's in Brazil, Salah and Mane going through at each other, etc. So that Watford team is going to be really quite interesting, actually.
All right then. Two who I think come out of the game with an awful lot of credit, in Joe Gomez and Ibrahima Konate. I think they both play very, very well indeed. On Gomez first, what I liked about him from right back, he is not Trent Alexander-Arnold. He's not going to be Trent Alexander-Arnold. We've all got to accept that and move ourselves along. But I thought he was willing to take a few chances, take a few risks, flash a ball across here and there. He wasn't ponderous when he got around the final third. And I think that that's the thing in the past, and that's often your criticism of centre-halves playing full-back, is they get towards that. I remember a Ranier Klavan game at left-back at Everton, where every single time the ball came to him when he was over the halfway line, Ranier was almost like, but what the fuck do you expect me to do with this? The thing here for Gomez was, he at least had a plan, and it tended to be quite direct when he got near their penalty area.
I thought it was probably his best 90, Neil, since he's come back. And there's been flashes where he's looked okay, but invariably, and you understand, he's going to tire at times. And I think, you know, he's been one where he has just needed a run of games, but for all the reasons we've mentioned, he's not been able to get those games. He does well yesterday. I said before, he's got no issue putting himself in the areas to put decent balls in, and we know he's not going to have the delivery of Trent, but no one has. No one's got that delivery. You know, Gary Neville often gets references as one of the best right backs in the Premier League history. He's got 35 assists in a 15-year career. Trent's got 16 this season. That fucking tells you the game has moved on. The game has moved on, and Trent and Robertson have skewed how we look at what fullbacks do. So I was pleased with Gomez yesterday. I think it's far too easy, and there's been far too many conversations about him being finished when we don't know, because we're not behind the scenes. And until you see him get that run, it's hard to really ascertain where he is in terms of his kind of getting back to what he was. I remember going to Leicester when Alisson makes that mistake, and you were there with me as well. I walked out of the ground that day thinking he's the best young centre-half in Europe. On the cover, he was fucking phenomenal that day. And he made a habit of being great on the cover. And there's a little snippet of it yesterday where there's a high line, and he's great on the cover, and he just sniffs out danger. And that's
they're like
he
gets
did.
In and Gomez sees it before the lads even see it, before the ball's played.
He was
played.
Great at doing that, sniffing danger, smelling danger. He was really good at it, and I think it's an asset that he's probably got over any of the others, I would suggest. And he's got that recovery pace, and you just want to see him get back to his best, because when he is at his best, he's one hell of an asset. As I say, I mentioned that game at Leicester. There's loads of other games. You know, you think about Everton in the Cup, where he was like the main guy in terms of seniority. Brilliant that day. There's loads of games where he was superb, and I hope he gets back, because for me, there's definitely a future if Joe Gomez could even show any signs of getting back to where he was 2-3 years ago.
Yeah, I couldn't disagree with anything you've just said there. He's absolutely good performance from him. He was much better in possession than he has been as well recently, because I found him wasteful. But yeah, that little snippet that you got of him with the recovery pace and reading the game was felt almost nostalgic, and it shouldn't feel that for someone who's still a young footballer who has had a terrible time with injuries. But it was just a timely reminder just how good he was, and it was also nice to see him coexist with Konate, who must be his, you know, not literally, but it'll feel like his enemy, you know, because Konate then puts in another absolutely fantastic performance, but it was nice to see that coexisting with Joe Gomez in the Liverpool team.
What's important, I think, is that when he is playing right back, the team have got to help him out early, because it's so different to what Trent's going to offer. And that's part of the problem we've had with Trent for quite a while.
That's
now.
Where sort of the 4-4-2 thing, and where he ends up with Henderson and Thiago, it's so that Gomez is always going to have a ball.
Yeah, absolutely. There is a long-term thing where when Trent's not there, it's been like, well, what do we do here? And we've tried Milner there to sort of try and replicate him, but even Milner can't do that. Milner's been a top-quality centre midfielder for the best part of 20 years now, and he still can't do it. So what hope have other players got? And Gomez, he's not even he's a centre-back ultimately, isn't he? So we've got to, as a team, adapt and make it easier for him. And I thought we did that yesterday. It was one of the first times I've seen us do that yesterday, because he's had a go recently, and it's not been quite the same, has it? But it was better yesterday, and he looks a lot more confident in it as well. It's like they've actually sat him down instead of just going, oh, you're playing right back today. It's like they've had him for 4 or 5 days and gone, right, you need to sort of do this, you need to go here, you need to go there, you need to do this, that and the other.
On Konate, Phil, it looks like he loves these games at the moment. He seems to be absolutely relishing every opportunity. I thought he was good, even at times when I thought Van Dijk was getting dragged into bits and pieces, which was a bit strange. I thought Konate was there and was rock solid.
Likes a battle, doesn't he? He really liked the front foot combat with Keenan Davis, didn't he? He really loved getting in his face, sniffing any balls out into his feet, getting right up his backside and getting stutter stopping him doing anything, because I think that was the danger. If you can let someone with the sort of the
profile,
there's a specific word I was looking for, I can't remember what it was, but someone like Davis, you let him get on the ball and hold it up and back into you and get his team 5-10 yards up the pitch, it makes things really difficult for you. And what I thought he was really good at, he was really good at getting right in his back and stopping the ball from getting to him, and that enabled us to be able to squeeze them backwards.
The four subs all at once, Ian, was interesting. As I say, they come on second half, he shifted the shape. You can see it's sort of becoming clearer on the pitch at the time, but then he does decide to go with the footballers. Now, there's something here where I thought both Henderson and Thiago were really good, but it also coincides with ultimately Nottingham Forest getting a few more opportunities. Now, I think Nottingham Forest take a few more risks. There's lots of opportunities for Liverpool to be a little bit better on the counter. But the four subs was quite the dramatic move. It is, when you stop to think about the sort of, it's changing effectively 40% of your outfield players. You know, that is, it's almost saying we're a new football team now. One way or another, we're a new football team now. And I think that was, I understood the drama of the move, if you know what I mean. But I think it did sort of knock them a little bit for about 5 minutes as everyone was trying to work out what's what.
Possibly. I mean, we spoke on the Friday show about whether he'd go with Fabinho or Henderson. We felt he'd have to go with one of them, because I think if you want to get the balance right, one of them has to play. So I think the Fabinho one was probably pre-planned. He was always coming off on about 60-odd. I think it does add something, because I think, you know, you're right to kind of mention that, you know, Thiago comes on. He's got this real habit, Thiago, of being able to come onto a game, or into a game, I should say, and just either get with the tempo or actually just set his own tempo.
Yeah.
You know, Burnley being the prime example, where he comes on and just changes it dramatically. So I think it does help. It does make Liverpool a little bit more open, for obvious reasons. But back to your point earlier on about this is coming at the end of a long kind of run of fixtures. Liverpool did not want extra time. They wanted to get it done and dusted. So I think the manager's thinking, well, we'll make these changes. You know, we've stayed with Forrest for 60 minutes. We stayed with them. We were the better team. But, you know, you could see they were starting to tire a little bit, although they do come good again. So I think it was just an injection of, we bring on these players now and we'll just start to create a little bit more. I thought Diaz actually, weirdly, maybe had this, one of his poorest kind of spells in the game. It wasn't quite working for him, because you think he's going to come on and cause absolute havoc. It doesn't quite work that way. But I think in terms of Henderson, Thiago, Neil, I think, yeah, whilst maybe one or two spaces do open up, that was a consequence of Forrest pushing a little bit more. But we started to set tempo, and I think Thiago was at the heart of that.
I do wonder if the manager's found a move he didn't realise he had with these mass substitutions, how we can literally just transform a game with it. I think Thiago is absolutely imperative to that, though. And I think I've never really seen a substitute in a not a goal scoring substitute, but a substitute who changes games quite as much as what he does. Because, as you say, it's just like, right, we're playing to this tune now, and that's it. He's changed it completely. And Liverpool look like, if it's not going right, you can look like a completely different outfit through the benefits of substitutions. And the thing with having the full squad available at the moment, and then having in the Champions League five, and then five to make yesterday, the managers, first they can pre-plan them, like a Fabinho one, but also, well, if it's not going right, the game's going to look completely different when I throw all this enormous amount of quality at a tiring team. And I think it's a real ace up the sleeve going into these next however many games it's going to be, for the manager to go, I can get rotation and transform a game in one move. I think that's an unbelievable thing.
I think all of that's true, Phil. The one thing that I think Liverpool are oddly short of, because there's lots of players who you can talk yourself into can do this, is footballers who can exist in wide midfield. It's a really strange little thing. I think Minamino offers very little wide right. Don't blame him for that, because I've never seen him play wide right in that way before. You know, you end up in a city. We've seen at times, for instance, Jota go out right in a 4-4-2 or 4-2-3-1. You know, yesterday I do think it was 4-4-2. I think 4-2-3-1 makes it look sound posher than it was.
Yeah.
You know, I think that Diaz was playing there at Porto, maybe it could suit him. It could possibly suit Mane off the right, but it doesn't. It feels as though there's a lot of Liverpool players, because this squad's been built for a very specific purpose, who, when he does want to do that, I'm always left feeling like it's interesting. You know, the idea that it was Diaz's poorest performance so far now as well. Do you know what I mean? It always feels misshapen for whoever it is who ends up in those wide midfield areas.
Yeah, it feels like there's a specific thing that you'd expect from a sort of wide midfielder. Traditionally, we've seen 4-4-2 for the most part of our lives, haven't we? And you sort of see overlaps from from midfielders around the sides of a fullback or whatever. You're not seeing that from anybody. Yeah, you're not. Minamino's not getting round the back of Joe Gomez and whipping a ball across the face of goal, is he? That's just not what he's doing. So it's quite interesting that we try it, because it's almost like, you know, the players aren't there for it, but we're going to do it anyway. And one thing the thing I thought it was really good for yesterday is it stopped. Like, I thought Jed Spence was really dangerous for them getting forward. I don't think he attacked after we made those substitutions. Yeah. He was so much further. He was 5-10 yards further back simply for the fact that he was looking at Diaz going, yeah, I'm not able to do that. I'm not able to go where I was now. And we just penned them back and you eventually, you sort of, you break them down.
It was something I never thought was the manager's strong point, substitutions, I must say. And then I think recently, I don't think he's improved. I think it's just the options have improved, but he's making so much more of a difference than I think he ever has done in his previous 5-6 years at Liverpool.
But it helps. It does help when you Jordan Henderson and Thiago was 2-1, though, doesn't it? It's not like when you go back and look at some of the bench from 5 years ago, it's like chalk and cheese, isn't it?
Last little thing, I just want to briefly mention the left-back, Ian. Think it's a really good ball. It's a different type of ball to the ball that you often see from a Liverpool point of view. You know, cuts back in on his right foot and fades it the way in which he does across there. It's a good performance, I thought.
Yeah, I think he does well. I think the ball is a great ball, and you often, you know, don't see them come off when the fullback switches onto his weaker foot. And I'd just been kind of having a bit of a pop at him for not using his right foot about 5 minutes earlier, and he goes and puts that in. So, I mean, fair play.
Somebody's got in his locker.
Yeah, he has. And I think, you know, there's been a lot of chat about, you know, can he replicate what Robertson does? Again, back to the Trent thing, really. It's very hard to do what Robertson does. And I think sometimes that can look a bit harsh on Jimmy Cass. But I think overall, since he's come in, apart from, you know, one or two performances where he has looked a little bit light in terms of being able to do what you want a Liverpool fullback to do, I think he's done pretty okay. I think, you know, there's a reason he's a backup fullback. Yeah. No, that there is a reason for that. But I think in the main, you don't look at a team sheet and see him on there and think, oh, for fuck's sake. You're not panicking. You know he's not going to give you exactly what you're looking for in terms of what Robertson does. But at the same time, Neil, I thought he was decent. And I think, you know, in the main, as I've said, I think most of his performances have been pretty decent for Liverpool, I have to say.
One thing I think about him, if you go back like 20 years, how many better left backs have we had in 20 years, in all seriousness? I think it might be 3, genuinely. Which is, I mean, it's a sad situation of how many poor left-backs we've had, but
there's a lot of teams you'd start for.
Yeah, exactly.
League,
oh, exactly, so. Yeah, 100%.
Absolutely. All right, then. Jan Arga-Fjortoff interviewed the manager post-match, and he used a phrase that I think we've got to start using, because it's well better, not just in the current climate, but also well better than this idea of fighting a war on four fronts. There's a German expression, which is dancing on many dance floors.
That's a bit of you, isn't it?
More than a bit of me. They are dancing on many dance floors, Liverpool, Phil. Dancing on 3, they're not dancing on 4, because one of them is obviously done and dusted. But it becomes such a massive April. The idea that should be said by any Liverpool supporter with any form of jeopardy, I hasten to add, is ridiculous. It's the April of our dreams, to be frank, and that's the way in which it's got to be looked at. When you look at the run of games, don't go, oh my God, that looks like a tough run of games. Look at it as, well, not least, we get to watch these play over and over, but we get to watch them play over and over in these massive, massive football matches that are legacy, career defining, potentially, for this Liverpool team.
Yeah, it's what you live for, isn't it, ultimately? And you sort of see why Manchester City, the last 5 years or so, haven't won the Champions League, because they've basically had this April, every April for the last however many years, having also done the League Cup, and you're basically playing football constantly from January, which is what we're doing now, and it's hard. You're looking at that fixtures and it's like, wow, and that's even with a favourable quarterfinal draw.
In the Champions League,
with some not dreadful league games as well, and it's still the constant bang, bang, bang. It's going to be really hard, but what a month it's going to be! I'm so excited.
It's fun. It's what we want, isn't it? That City one yesterday made it even more flavoursome. Is that a word? You know, there's tales all over the place. And you know, I put a tweet out yesterday, and it was before the Forest game, and obviously before the Benfica game, saying if you get past Bayern and you get past City, you deserve to win the lot. And that's not me saying that I expect us just to roll Forest and Benfica over. That I respect them, but that's almost like a prize in itself for me. Is you got past Forest, now you get Man City, you beat City, you beat Bayern. Your favourites to win both competitions. That's it for me.
That this is where I think in terms of the journey this season, Ian, and I'm not saying this in any way, shape or form, like this is what I want to see happen, but there's a little bit of a thing, I think, where this season's a reminder why on honours boards people do put runners up. Because sort of what Paul sort of described there to me, there is a chance. I mean, there's a chance that they could go all the way, i.e. last weekend of the season in the league and both finals, and pick nothing up from this point. And there's just the one that they had.
2002.
Yeah, it's, but they've already got one in the back pocket, yeah. Is the key thing about that. They've got one in the back pocket. But the flip side of that is there's a chance that, you know, there's a chance they could get eliminated at any stage from any of them. And there's a chance they could go all the way in all of them, or just one or two. But for me, this is, you know... When I say it's sort of, it's career-defining and legacy-defining, we're a funny football club in that, listen, for me, the lads who won that Champions League in 1819 and the lads who won the league for the first time in 30 years, they can have all the legacy they want. They can have everybody else's legacy. They can have great big bowls of the stuff. But, you know, you look at, for instance, the career medals won by Phil Neal when he played for Liverpool. The point is that to be... pushing at that level, Phil Thompson, Alan Hansen, Kenny Dalglish, to be pushing at that level, seasons like this, they don't come along very often, and the idea of being the Liverpool team to have a real go at the quadruple, my God.
You're absolutely right to frame it that way. I mean, they won't talk about it in open forums, but you can bet your life the players are talking about it personally between themselves, because this is stuff where you're written into folklore. You know, it will, no, you can say it will never be beaten, but you can really can say it probably will never be beaten, because it's never been done. You know, to go and win four trophies like that, you know, that is a huge legacy, and the players will be only too aware of that. You know, it often frustrates me where you hear about pundits talk about this Liverpool team and they won't put them in the bracket of great teams because it's framed as one league title. And they conveniently forget there's also a European Cup in there as well, but they'll say things like, you've got to win two or three league titles. Well, good luck spinning that. If they go and win another league title or another European Cup, never mind if they go and put three or four in the cabinet as well. So I think, you know, this team, it can smell it. It knows it's there for them. You know, they will need a little bit of luck because, as we say, it's never been done. You know, your points before about Oxlade-Chamberlain, it's not a hard sell, this. Where would you rather be now? Mm. Where would you rather be? Yeah, you might not play all the games, you might not play all the minutes, but you could play a significant part in doing something that's never been
done. You've already played that's a significant part, so let's finish it off now.
Absolutely, yeah. So the players will all know there's an opportunity to kind of write a bit of history, and no one else can do it. No one else has got a chance of doing it this season. Liverpool are the only team with an opportunity to go and do something unparalleled. So I think you can see it in the displays, you can see it in the performances, you can see it in the way the manager talks. Both pre and post match, they feel this is on. They feel this is absolutely on. Salah feels it's on. He put that little tweet out after the League Cup, one down, three to go. They fucking know it's possible. It's going to take a little slice, but they've got all the ability, and if they can ride a bit of luck with injuries, there's every chance.
I don't think it's what they're doing. It's also when they're doing it. African Cup of Nations season, but also who's the other team that they're up against. They're doing it in the Manchester City era. Let's frame it that way, because Manchester City are formidable, and to be on the cusp, well, you've got to go now and face them up. It's like you're playing Sonic the Hedgehog and you're facing the boss at the end now, and that boss is Pep Guardiola's Manchester City. You know, you've got to go and jump on his head a few times between now and the end of the season and
collect those rings.
Well, that's it, isn't it? Because You've got to see them off in two competitions at least, and that is the real test that comes at the end. Go and do them in the FA Cup, surpass them in the league, and you possibly might have to do it again in the Champions League. And if you can achieve all that, then you do deserve history's on your side, that you deserve to be recognised as one of the best teams ever.
The tightrope styled nature of the season at the same time is a little bit weird though. Like, we talk about this and it's fine, like the season could be finished after basically five games after this international window. In all seriousness, we lose to City twice, we get knocked out by Benfica, the season finishes on May the 22nd, we could basically be done on the 16th of April, and it's like, I don't think we will be, to be perfectly honest, but I'm just sort of saying that the way it could go and how quickly things can change, and how sort of the thin the margins are, basically, that we've got to be on this. We've got to be on this for six weeks after this international break.
This is why, I completely agree, and this is why if you just offered me now either of the big two,
yeah,
I'd go, yeah, great.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely brilliant. What a great season. It does not get better than this. And I think that is the crux of it still, is that we can talk about the other stuff, but either of the big two, you know, is stuff of your dreams still.
We've won 6 European Cups in our history. We've won 19 league titles. Liverpool been going since 1892. That's a lot more than 19 years. That, you know, it's a hell of a lot more than 19 years.
There's a reason no one wins 4 trophies. Correct. Exactly. It's fucking hard to
exactly. do. Exactly. And as I said before, you've seen Manchester City try and do it the last few years, and it's like, well, it's just got too much for them. They have an off day. Like, I mean, I think we're in a position where you look at that run from Manchester City's point of view, where they play Atletico, Liverpool, Atletico, Liverpool. I refuse to believe Pep Guardiola will not do something mad in those 4 games where they either put themselves in a really bad position with us in the league, lose to us in the FA Cup, or get knocked out the European Cup. There's something he will do that's mad. I just don't know when it's going to be, but I can tell you now he'll do something mental.
Well, it's also such a nightmarish run from his point of view. Such a nightmarish run if you're Guardiola.
I'm delighted with their Champions League draw. Like, almost the point where, from our FA Cup point of view, I would have rather taken City ahead of Chelsea, because I can't be arsed with the idea that you beat Chelsea in an FA Cup semi-final and your reward is Manchester City. You just couldn't be bothered with that.
The legwork that goes into outthinking them two managers as well.
Yeah.
You know, you the three best managers in the world are himself and the two he's facing. That's a nightmare for everyone. The fixtures, the players, the pitch. But for him to have to formulate plans to oversee them too as well in such a tight space of time, it's unenviable. Even for a Guardiola, and you know the games that Phil's talking about, he could bookend them games by doing something mad that ends up costing them as well. And that could be the league. It could be whatever. I don't think Manchester City will be looking forward to them 4 fixtures at all. And if you ask me now, do I think they'll get past Atletico Madrid? I do think they'll get past Atletico Madrid. I think they're a much better football team than Atletico Madrid. But the impact that them 4 games can have on them could be immeasurable.
One thing that's interesting is I think we're probably going to play on the Saturday, aren't we? When you look at everything, we're at home to Benfica, they're away in Madrid on the Wednesday. Now, which would you rather have?
Yeah.
That's a huge advantage to us, I think.
Indeed. Looking forward to it.
Can't wait for it. I think on the City Atletico thing, I mean, there is a world where they could just swat Simeone's team aside, but there's also a world where they go out to them because they'll just frustrate the life out of them. And it's not just physically what it does to you. I think playing a Simeone team mentally, it's exhausting. The preparation for it, but what you have to go through to kind of come out the other end in the football match is some effort, because they are all graft, they are all kind of dirty tricks, they are all kind of, you know, it's the kind of really kind of dark art of football, isn't it, when you come up against them, and it makes for a fucking really, really tough couple of games.
Simeone will already know which Manchester City player he wants to try and get sent off is. He'll have a list, he'll have a top 3, pros and cons, get the lads in, it's an international break, we've got to talk about something, let's take it off.
It'll help him keep his own players on the pitch, because that will help him, because they've struggled to do that against Liverpool this season. But I think Paul's right. I think coming up against those two managers, those 4 games, I mean, we've already spoken before on these shows, you know, City's squad, whilst it gets talked about an awful lot, because 1-18, 1-17, it's really, really strong. You get past those numbers, there's not loads there. You'll always see 2 or 3 lads on their bench that you've never really heard of. So if they get a couple of injuries, and it could happen, I think they've been pretty okay with injuries this season. I know Diaz is out at the minute, but if that goes against them a little bit, you know, it could be something like that, just turns the tide.
And I know Real Madrid got battered last night, but it's pretty much done in Spain as well. They've got a decent gap, haven't they?
Yeah.
So this is Atletico Madrid everything. They'll be resting for that.
They need to qualify for next year's, though, is the one thing. Though they'll put a little run together.
At the minute,
They're under the fourth, but they've got a nice little gap. It's better to a fifth, and they've got a 4-point gap on them. The level on points with Barca, and they're 3 points behind Sevilla. So they're just they just need, it would be no bad thing if whatever the next midweek, the next weekend game is, Atletico Madrid just stroll through it, get all 3 points, better drop some points, and then it does become, right lads, there's one thing for us left to do here.
Yeah.
And to go from there, marvellous stuff, absolutely marvellous. What a time this is to get stuck into the mighty boys in red. Download the app, enjoy everything that's on there, use the tokens and go from there. It's been an absolute pleasure. Of course, it's been an absolute pleasure. I have a thing, said it for years doing this job, one of the things that you rate a good season with is whether or not you're still in with things to believe in and things to hope for in April. Liverpool could not believe in or hope for any more. Sports Social Podcast Network.